Hey, everybody. We have a special treat for you today. We're doing a kind of a more of a deep dive on cambium products. So I know I've heard about cambium. I haven't used it a lot. I don't have a lot of experience, so I get to play the idiot, which I'm terrific at. Today, we have a lot of excellent guests. So today we have with us Saqid from cambium and Dimitri. You guys say hi.
Hey, everybody.
All right. We also have the venerable Justin Wilson.
Howdy, howdy.
What's your association with cambium, Justin?
So, we've used cambium products for quite a while, and I think we have a press release getting ready to be released, Saqid and Dimitri, about the cambium consultant program. Is that almost ready to go?
Yeah. We basically are kind of invited Justin to play a role of consulting for us and be on the inside with some of our technology and advanced beta programs and things like that. So Justin's graciously accepted to play that role. So that's kind of the relationship with us.
That's awesome. Also, we have Mike Hammett, the usual. Tell us about your involvement with cambium, Mike. Mike, you're still muted. We're going to ignore you until you figure out how to unmute yourself.
There you go. How about that? I bought a Wisp in 2010 that was using Canopy products. It was still Motorola at the time. I was using Microtik. Ubiquiti had just come out with their MX line. And I said, there's no way I'm going to, and it was old cambium stuff. It wasn't even new cambium or Canopy stuff. And I was like, I'm not spending money on all that. Fast forward a couple of years, they come out with the EPMP line. And actually started replacing that little Canopy network with EPMP products. And and actually one of my first experiences with them was, shall we say, incredibly dreadful. I wrote a big rant on the AFMUG mailing list, and I finished up basically saying, I'm going to bring all these dang products up to Rolling Meadows, which is like an hour away from me. And, you guys can figure it out. And somebody responded saying, okay. I was like, well, wait, what? You're like, you actually want me to bring all this stuff up there? Yeah, bring it up. We'll figure it out. So I did. I drove up that next morning, and with all the products, I couldn't figure out how to put back together and whatnot. And they identified some manufacturing process issues. And, they had a guy, take each unit I had apart to fix the problem, put them back together, went to the factory, told him, hey, you have to do this to fix it. And I was like, wow, that's the most a manufacturer has ever done, like, when I complain about their product.
Mike complains a lot, so that's saying something.
they couldn't have handled it any better. Short of you have any pallets of free stuff. next version of the hardware, completely addressed those issues. It was a great experience.
I get it. Calm it down, fanboy. I get it. I see where you're at. All right. So also with us today is Brian Gray. New one to me. You're from a Wisp called, I'm going to say this wrong, Joing. Is that right?
Joink.
I'm sorry. So he is our SME today, is our subject matter expert on a little bit of this that we're going to be talking. Not to say that everybody else here isn't, but he's a real world use case. So that's what I like. I like hearing from the real folks that aren't on the take like Mike. I guess probably the easiest way to get started is to hopefully Saqid or Dimitri can give us the elevator pitch, I should say, on what is cambium, where did you guys come from, and who are you targeting these days?
Sure, Greg. I'll make this short and sweet because I'm sure we all want to hear from Brian more. Cambium came from Motorola, and I think the most prevalent name that is associated with cambium and what most Wisps know us from is Canopy. 7-8 years ago, maybe even 10, I can't even remember anymore, but it was probably one of the most breakthrough products in the fixed wireless broadband world when we were still tinkering with ISDN and whatnot. But that's the heritage of Cambium. It was part of the bigger Motorola back when the two-way radio business and there was cellular and whatnot. We were a wireless broadband component of the big Motorola with Canopy as our flagship product. Fast forward a bunch of years, we split away from Motorola and about 5 years ago became an independent company called Cambium Networks. With that independence came tremendous velocity, new attitude towards the market, new innovation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And from a product perspective, we continue to cater to our core customer base, which is the wireless internet service provider. And in that space, we evolved our original Canopy products into the PMP 450 platform, and then eventually something recently in the CN Medusa, which is a 14 by 14 massive MIMO product. So all of that catered to our customer base that was with us through the Canopy. But along the way, we also recognized the fact that there's a whole other band of WISPs that emerged in the last 6-7 years, leveraging third-party products that were at a different price point. So out of that necessity, we needed to create a product that addressed that price point and allow those WISPs to either grow with us at a better affordable price point, or even potentially flip their hardware that they invested in and go to something better. The whole time, the primary focus being affordability. So from that perspective, as Mike mentioned, ePMP was born, right? The meaning of E has lost its original definition, but economical was the original goal. Uh-huh. So the idea behind ePMP was simply, hey, can we keep it very cost competitive? And the overarching statement is, can it be a subscriber that's right around the $99, $100 ballpark, right? The subscriber cost is the big deal. So we said, all right, we can do a subscriber cost. And then the next question was, why would people buy our stuff? What problems are they facing today with the third-party stuff? And because we did the Canopy stuff, the differentiation, more or less, Greg, became software, right? And interference, self-interference, GPS sync, scalability, all of these terms. And then I'll let Brian speak to his real-world experience. But we tried to pack a lot of the goodness that we had in Canopy into a more affordable platform in ePMP. So we said, all right, great. Had some struggles in the beginning with software and whatnot, but we recovered. Things are great. People love it. But then the next challenge popped up, which was, okay, you've got this subscriber, this $99, but if you're a WISP with 3,000 subscriber units out there, it's still a heck of an investment try to drive to every house and replace those subscriber units, even if you wanted to go to ePMP. So that's when the other sort of a unconventional, out-of-the-box idea of Elevate came about. So my elevator pitch now has gone beyond 30 seconds, but the idea behind Elevate was, can we get our software to run on some of these third-party subscriber modules, given that the hardware has some commonality? And if we could run our software on third-party hardware, then that WISP challenge of replacing all of that 3,000 subscriber units becomes a significantly lower challenge. They do not have to drive to all 3,000 houses or 500 houses or 300 houses. They simply have to replace the AP. Over the air, you update the software, and it becomes a virtual ePMP subscriber. So all the goodness that we talk about, we packed it into the ePMP platform, and with Elevate, allowed a migration opportunity. So that is the essence of what we've been up to, what ePMP is all about, and what this Elevate concept is all about. Gotcha. We can always come back, and we can talk about other things like our Wi-Fi and all of that, but that's sort of the main focus that I wanted to get across to you guys.
Gotcha. A couple of questions really quick before we dive straight in. You said ePMP came out, which is the economical PMP. What sacrifices were made, you know what I mean, versus the old and the new, right? You changed, sure, it got cheaper. You know, what did we lose out of there?
Yeah. Good question, Greg. Fundamentally, if you look at some of the differences, the reason ePMP was affordable is, just like every other company out there, we are leveraging Wi-Fi chipsets. Right? So Wi-Fi chipsets are billions of them out there. So you can get very powerful system on a chip with the RF being integrated and get it for $5. You go build a proprietary radio system, it may cost you $25, $30. But as you do that, you lose some of the flexibility. And you'll see that an EPMP will advertise we support 120 subscribers. On our proprietary platform, we'll support 230 or 238, if I'm not mistaken. So, and then as you scale and get to a 100 subscriber network, things like latency starts being a difference between the two. We also sacrifice in terms of, you know, you hear about IP67, IP57, the housing, big metal housing with a lot of gaskets and things like that. EPMP, you'll see more of a plastic-based housing with overmold metal and things like that. So I wouldn't say there are tremendous sacrifices. I think there's more adjustments based on the market need. I don't see a whole lot of networks where people are putting up 100 subscribers. So it's certainly fitting a correct need, and, you know, some tweaks and some sacrifices were made.
All right. So if just to replay it out of my head, just to make sure I heard it right. So what you guys are doing, and I heard you earlier say hardware has commonality. So you're basically using the same chipsets that everybody else is using, and the secret sauce for you is going to be the software on the back end.
Exactly, Greg. The secret sauce is the software. And to some extent, I would say that when you tear open one of our units and you look at things like the shielding over the RF circuitry or ESD protection, a lot of that, there is some difference. So we do add some of our reliability heritage into the EPMP platform.
And don't forget filtering. Don't forget about the BSA, which is the beam steer antenna we have. Right. Nobody has beam steer antenna at the same price level as we do. So
okay, and so the PMP line still exists as well, right? So it's not just you guys have abandoned that and then moved over to EPMP.
No, absolutely. Both platforms have their own roadmap. They're both proceeding in their own way. And in some customers' cases, the PMP is what makes sense for them because they have very dense sectors with a lot of subscribers. In a lot of customers' cases, especially people that kind of came into the scene in the last 4 or 5 years, EPMP makes a lot of sense, especially with an Elevate migration path.
I usually say that there are two different product lines, BMW 3rd Series and BMW 5 Series. They can both exist at the same time, and there is a need for both. So,
okay. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. So EPMP, we've talked about the $99 subscriber price. How about on the AP side? It's not the same access point for PMP and EPMP, right? Is it different?
No. Very different, very different. That's kind of what Dimitri was hinting at. So today we have a $499 GPS synced access point, and then we have a $600 access point that has GPS sync plus some dynamic filtering to block out neighboring channel interference and beam steering accessory. All in all, you're looking at, by the time you add a sector antenna and whatnot, just about $1,000 or so total cost on the AP side.
And that's on the EPMP line, right?
That's correct.
All right. How about on the PMP line? Just for funsies, what does an equivalent access point look like?
So PMP line tends to run a little higher. So you may look at something like a $3,000 access point, or our flagship product with the 14x14 massive MIMO, you may be looking at a $5,000 access point. So that's kind of how the prices are differentiated.
Okay.
And then I wanted to chime in there that both product lines, EPMP and PMP, both have light versions of their APs available. With, you know, license, you know, where it's a cheaper product that's limited by the number of subscriber units or whatnot that you can have on there, and then you just pay a software license to upgrade to the full AP capability. A few hundred bucks off the EPMP, you know, setup.
Gotcha. So it's kind of a migration path.
Yeah, if you want to get a flavor of it, you can buy the Lite AP, which limits you to connect to 10 subscribers, but it's considerably cheaper, as Mike pointed out.
Yeah, okay. And on the EPMP line, it's just the subscriber count. You're not enabling extra features. You have the full-blown AP from the start. You just, you know, have a limited number of clients that can connect to it.
Gotcha. So it's maybe more of a way to kind of dip your toe in.
Yep. Yeah, because I know the word licensing is not a popular term in this industry. So it's a good point to clarify that it really is something to just dip your toe in, and that's the idea behind it.
I know the idea of licensing, the concept of licensing hurts my heart a little bit because I come from like the old Cisco days where you bought iOS, you got everything, right? And now everything is an individually licensed feature. You know, every upgrade, you want a new routing protocol, you got to. But I get it, right? In the day and age we're in, that's how people are. They make money, right? It's off the licensing. So if you make hardware that lasts forever, you got to figure out a way to monetize it. And you do that through licensing, right?
Exactly.
Let's see. So you guys hinted at earlier, Elevate. So in a sea of, and I'm going to throw out some other names, a sea of Ubiquity and Microtik and Bicells and just every other brand that's out there on the market, you guys came up with a very interesting way to differentiate yourselves, as well as I think give people the ability to try out your product and then a natural migration path. And that would be the Elevate product. And I want to hear from Brian himself, a man that's actually started using it, what it really, how it works, right? What does it mean to him? What does it mean to his network? And, you know, kind of how's it actually been working out for you? So Brian, first quick, give us just a quick 30-second background on you and your network as it exists today.
Okay, so Joink's been in the wireless business since 2001, and we largely went with Air Max in the 2010 area. So we were pretty entrenched with Ubiquity when EPMP first came out. We tested EPMP. As long as you had a fantastic signal, it would, you know, beat the pants off of Ubiquity all day long. Once you kind of got out to the edge, it sort of fell apart, and that's of course where we need the coverage, is at the edge. So we ignored it for a couple of years while they developed it. About a year ago, we looked back into it just because we were having scalability problems with the Air Max line. You know, we sat around waiting for the magical AC stuff to fix everything, and you know, a couple of years down the road, they still didn't have their Prism stuff out. I talked to Saqib, and he said, look, any instance where you can get Ubiquity to work, EPMP will work better. We had problems. We solved them. Buy all the stuff. If you don't like it, I'll take it back. So he convinced us to forklift one tower. This is pre-Elevate availability. So we forklifted a tower, you know, with similar CPE, similar signal levels, using the same channel size, same center channel frequency. We were seeing about 2x the throughput.
Wow.
So that was cool. But, you know, there was a lot of pain involved in replacing. You know, I think we did maybe 30 CPE for that test and four sectors. So.
And when you said scalability issues, was that number of clients that could connect to a single access point, or is that just how much throughput you could get to clients?
Well, what we found is if you have one client on Air Max, it tends to work really well, and then it starts going downhill from there. We've also found that if you have one client who uploads while everybody else downloads, it takes the aggregate throughput of the sector and just destroys it. So if, say, you have an aggregate throughput available of, 80 meg aggregate for one client, then you put on two clients. If they're both downloading, it stays pretty close to that 80 number. You go to five or six clients, it's still decent, but you take one of those clients and you start uploading at 10 meg, you know, it might have the aggregate throughput, which is pretty awful.
Here's what I like about Brian. Of all the, you know, Brian's did a good number of posts on the Facebook groups and stuff. Brian has all this data. I think, you know, either you, I imagine you with like sheets and sheets of paper, or you have all this data in your head, because Brian is very, very methodical and very thorough about when it comes to testing and, you know, the results that he's seeing.
Very scientific.
Yeah,
huh?
I'm not a ooh, shiny new toy person. So, you know, I would be perfectly fine with my 2003 Waverider gear if it could still make me any money. I don't care about a shiny new box.
Yeah, I hear you.
So after that initial test, we did another tower. just the sheer amount of manpower it takes to forklift quickly, and many of our tower leases were restricted by the number of antennas, so it's not like we can go overlay EPMP and migrate customers, as it's convenient. We would either go out, swap the AP, run in Wi-Fi mode, and try and get everybody switched within a week, or vice versa, switch it into Wi-Fi mode, start replacing the CP, then go switch the access points at the end of the event.
So these first two towers, how many clients are we talking about each tower that you were aggregating?
The first tower was like 30. It was, enough risk that wouldn't absolutely kill us if things went completely sideways. The next tower, I think we did 65.
Mm.
So a lot of our markets are fairly rural. And another piece of this is that we're largely doing 2.4 gigahertz in this area. So we're even more constrained than a lot of WISPs when you look at the frequency available to use.
Gotcha.
Because you might see, three houses from our tower sites, but, through some of the trees, you can get to another 30 houses. So after we did the second one, we kind of put the brakes on and just let it run for a while to make sure that we could get through a winter without a lot of pain. I usually like to run a full year through equipment during R&D. That all went pretty well. We looked at the usage graphs. So the second site we had done was like in November, and in December, it's almost a straight vertical line on the bandwidth graphs for the site. And so that's where we saw we didn't really add a lot of clients here, but we've doubled consumption without increasing the speeds to the end user. So it told me that the AirMax solution that we had in place just wasn't delivering. It wasn't meeting demand in any way, shape, or form. So once Elevate became available on 2.4, we tested it in our shop for a week or so, and then we picked a site and sort of held on and hoped everything went really well. You load the firmware, and we had a guy on the tower to swap the APs. Did a planned maintenance notification to our customers. Did it in the middle of the day. Customers experienced roughly a minute and a half or 2 minutes of downtime.
Wow.
Basically the time it takes for the radio to reboot. Our guy was able to swap the AP in the same time, and they you can onboard something like 100 SMs in 2 minutes.
All right, so
on EPMP,
we just covered
really
a
quick.
Whole lot of ground really fast. Let's reel back a little bit for sure. People that are still new to Elevate. Explain how you actually so Elevate is you're flashing a Cambium firmware onto, say, a Ubiquiti radio, right?
Right. As far as I know, currently all they support is Ubiquiti hardware. And there's a specific set of Ubiquiti hardware that they support. They're not going to support any of the AC line, and I think that probably can't be done. From what I understand, the AirMax chip has become hardware at this point. The original AirMax M-series stuff, it was all done in software on the, on the primary CPU, which is part of the scaling issues there.
All right. What's the process like to actually do the flashing? Is that tedious? Is that cumbersome? Is it actually fairly straightforward?
It's the same as doing a firmware update, but instead of choosing a Ubiquiti firmware, you choose the Cambium Elevate firmware. It's pretty painless. We haven't scripted it. We do it manually, but I think it could be scripted relatively easily.
So what was your failure rate? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Justin.
Maybe Dimitri or Saqid can jump in. We were talking about, not supporting the AC. I think the one of the main thoughts behind the whole Elevate is it's a interim solution. Hey, this is how you get to Cambium. And then from that point on, you can put on, just plain Cambium devices. That way you can get your network over to Cambium, and then your new people, you're going to buy Cambium devices from Cambium to get them on.
Sure. I just mentioned it. I didn't want someone expecting that, if it says Ubiquiti on it, it can have Cambium firmware, and that's not the case. I mean, even in the old M series gear, there's a limited subset of what they actually support. And I mean, they support the bulk of the devices out there, but it's important for anybody planning to go with Elevate to, you know, do a little homework ahead of time and make sure the devices are compatible, so they don't get right. disappointed that they brick some devices out there.
Brian's point is a good one. Essentially, I think we support somewhere in the 46 different models of Ubiquiti. So we try to hit up all the more popular ones, but just to give you an example, something like the Lightbeam is not supported, which is a CISO device. I don't think the Lightbeam is a super popular product in the U.S., but every other day I get a request about, hey, how about Elevate for Lightbeam? So Brian's right on that front, and AC is not supported today. Maybe it will be in the future, but to segue into Justin's comment, the idea here is if Brian is now on Elevate and he's got EPMP access points on the towers, my desire for Brian is hopefully his business is growing and he's going to buy EPMP subscribers on other new greenfield opportunities. But more important than that, my view for Brian is that, you know, Brian's now in the Cambium house. So if I think about my roadmap and I look at things like our 11AC Wave 2 products, which is where multi-user MIMO comes in, Brian's going to be the guy that's going to go replace one of his EPMP APs, put up an AC AP, and he's going to have interoperability right away. So the whole Elevate journey is A, migration, short-term, solve your problem, but B, take you inside Cambium and then take you on as part of our roadmap.
Gotcha. So in a nutshell, if you have an actual EPMP CPE, you know, a radio at the client side, it's going to perform better than an Elevate Ubiquiti product, right?
Right. It's kind of the things we talked about on the subscriber side as well, the filtering, the amount of noise it generates and all of that. So, and Greg, to think in terms of business terms, the way Elevate licensing is priced, you're still going to be better off buying our hardware, getting the warranty, and it's actually going to be cheaper than buying a Ubiquiti radio and putting Elevate software on it. I mean, that's how we kind of position this.
Gotcha. So on the licensing, so say I have a tower and I want to roll it to Elevate and I buy 50 licenses to cover my 50 users. Once I roll those guys and then I decommission them with actual EPMP hardware, can I reuse those licenses on another tower or do I have to purchase 50 more?
No. So yes, short answer is you can repurpose them. We are right now going through a beta of what we call the floating license. And I can't remember, Brian, you participated in the floating license or not. But the idea behind it...
I did not.
You did not. Okay. So Brian has licenses today that are fixed to a particular AP. So if he moves that AP, those licenses go with it. But we are going through a floating license beta concept, which means as a user operator, as a WISP, you buy X number of licenses, and essentially that's yours. And the APs go and check out licenses as they see Elevated subscribers coming into the network.
That's killer. So this actually truly becomes a migration path.
Yes. So we got a bunch awesome. Of people trying it out right now.
That's awesome. Because it also, I mean, to your end, it also encourages people to go ahead and swap out the hardware, which is ultimately what you guys want. So
that's right.
Win for both parties. That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. So Brian, kind of rolling back to the Elevate flashing question or the process, one thing I was wondering is, whenever you actually do the firmware upgrade, did you experience any failures on those?
No, actually, we have never had a failure during the upgrade process.
That's killer.
We have had a couple times where we've had to do a truck roll, where we just had to power cycle the device. Once we kind of figured that out, then we just have our call center call out to the end user and have them power cycle it, where... You know, I don't know if it rebooted faster, the GPU, you know, the AP wasn't up and operational when it tried to associate, and then if it got like a stuck beacon or what the issue was. That's on 3.4.1 firmware. We've only done one tower so far with 3.5, so it's possible that those issues have been resolved by now. We had some failures after the fact. Approximately 2 weeks after we elevated, we've had as high as a 20% rate on the 25 dBi version of the XW power beams in 5 gigahertz. We really don't see failures on the 2 gig stuff, and we don't typically see failures on most of the platforms. On these particular radios, they're all the same chipset, so, you know, it could be a manufacturing issue with Ubiquiti. And it's not that the radio actually bricks, it its flash becomes corrupt. So if we bring it back and we do a TFTP restore to the Ubiquiti firmware, it's back in working order without any, obvious issues from operation when we've, stuck it up in our test lab and ran it for a while.
Now, when you were flashing the firmware to these guys, do you guys typically go through and reboot the devices first and then flash it, or are you guys just, flashing it in place?
No, typically we just flash it in place. I know okay. The recommended procedure is to reboot it, but we typically would prefer to find out the worst case scenario. So, we just throw the firmware in there, and if we have an issue where it gives a memory error or not enough memory type of error, then we just reboot the unit, and usually that clears the problem. If you log into an old Ubiquiti that gives you a flash file system warning, you probably ought to plan on just replacing that unit, but we have had success in upgrading that with Ubiquiti firmware and then elevating it after the fact and not having it die.
Gotcha. So something else I had questions about, Brian, that hopefully you can speak to, because I've never had any experience with this, is what's the management like on the EPMP system? How easy is it for you to manage? And so, you are accustomed to the Ubiquiti way of managing your access points. I'm not sure if you used air control or if you were just sort of manually getting in there, but compare and contrast the two for me.
Well, on a very basic level, I like air control a lot better. One of the real key points of us slowing down and not adopting Cambium as fast is you can't schedule upgrades like in mass firmware upgrades. You can do mass firmware upgrades from CN Maestro, but you have to actually have a live human there and click the button, and in my experience, if you have a couple failures, it will just stop the job instead of just assuming, hey, the customer's powered off their device, don't care, moving on to the next guy. So if you queue up 250 subscribers to get updated, and you stay up till 3 a.m. to click update, and then you go to check it at 7 a.m. and it got through four of them and then quit, it can get pretty frustrating. Whereas at the same time, I can queue up, I could go queue a Ubiquiti upgrade job now and schedule for 3 months from now. It doesn't matter. You can tell what time to do it and it takes care of it. So
gotcha.
That's a pretty significant hit for us. The CN Maestro, which is, Cambium's equivalent to air control, is available as a cloud-based version or an on-premise version. We've chosen to use the on-premise version. And one of my other complaints there is you can't control, your data logging time period. It holds data, historical data for a week, whereas on air control, basically, if you have disk space that you want to burn, you can tell it to hold that data almost indefinitely. So, those are a couple minor, I think the scheduling piece is major, but the other complaint's a little bit more minor. But there are things that CN Maestro tracks that you don't get with air control, or that it does it better. I can tell you that CN Maestro was a lot easier to set up and has been more consistently easy to maintain on the server side rather than air control and their various, you know, you get a Java update and all of a sudden it doesn't work, and things like that. And air control too, we didn't, we never adopted too much. We didn't like the standalone application for the clients.
Gotcha. Compare and contrast the troubleshooting process, like between, say, an air control or an EPMP using CN Maestro.
There isn't a significant difference. You know, we still try to look at signal levels and see if those drastically change or if it was a gradual change that would follow with, like, you know, leaves on the trees. You have a lot of the, you have very similar signal type metrics. Well, they're not exactly the same because you're not going to have, you know, air max capacity and quality. You have, you install CCQ and you look at your MCS rates, those sort of items.
Okay.
EPMP does have some extra features like a session counter. So you can know if you have a customer who's complaining of intermittent connectivity issues where, you know, if say you monitor your customers with ICMP and you have this beautiful green graph because you're only sending pings every, you know, 3 or 4 minutes or something like that, it could mean that you could potentially miss an outage that they experience for, say, 90 seconds when they disassociate, reassociate.
Mm.
So there is a session counter that you can track in the EPMP platform so that you can, you know, help to improve the quality of experience for your customers. There's also a reboot counter. So if, say, you're having voltage drop on the cable, and the unit randomly reboots, it helps you to kind of track that down rather than just having an uptime counter where you could think, okay, the customer rebooted this before they called into us. That's why the uptime's 10 minutes. If the uptime's 10 minutes and it's been rebooted like 400 times, you know, there's just more data points that you get to go off of.
That's one of the things I really like about CN Maestro is when you log in, you know, you have these, you know, I always call them the danger buttons. You know, when you log in, one of the first things you see is, you know, hey, do I have a bunch of stuff down? If I look at my, you know, if I make one click and look at my network, I can see, do I have, you know, 5 things down? Do I have 20 things down, or is it all good?
Yeah. Something else that Mike touched on earlier is a manufacturer's ability to react to support requests and things like that. And this is one I guess I'm asking to Saqib. If somebody has feature requests for, say, CN Maestro or any one of the other product lines, is there a fairly clearly defined method for people to submit those and kind of get updates and roadmap information and all that?
Yes, Greg, there is. Typically, we have a section in our forum with customer ideas that people submit, and we regularly review that. Having said that, you know, we do our best to communicate back on when something has been accepted or not, but the reality is, you know, the ideas that are being requested by 10 people get higher priority than the ideas requested by 2 or 3 people, right? That's limited resources, and you know, and we try to keep a big picture view, right? So if we're spending a lot of money on developing multi-user MIMO, then we might ignore some of the temporary requests for now and say, let's get that big fish cooked. So that's kind of how we handle it.
Gotcha.
I do have a question for Brian, actually. So Brian, customer support perspective, not Cambium customer support, but your customer support, number of calls you've gotten, any experience changed for you from that perspective since moving to Elevate and EPMP?
The first go around on EPMP was fairly painful. Actually, we lost some subscribers.
I was hoping
that
he wouldn't bring that up, but
you
probably shouldn't ask those questions. We had various like disconnect issues and you know, for no particularly good reason, and these were, you know, customers who had Ubiquiti service for, you know, some of them 10 years. So that hurt a little bit. It got fixed in some firmware. I think that was back in the 3.1 days. So all of those issues have been resolved. The complaints that we've gotten have almost always centered around disconnect, like reassociation issues. So for whatever reason, the client drops and then reconnects. So I don't know if that's localized interference to them, if it's a programming issue on our end. I don't think it's, I don't think it's the second. But it's something that if we experienced it on Ubiquiti, we certainly weren't aware of it, and the customer wasn't aware of it. So we don't really seem to get those complaints anymore on true Cambium deployments. We have gotten it some on a few of the Elevates, but it's a relatively small percentage. But when it affects somebody, it affects them in a big way. And so our solution thus far has been go throw away the Ubiquiti radio and put a Cambium radio in its place. So the Elevate process for us, it's a quick migration progress, and we do intend to leave Ubiquiti radios in the field until they implode, just knowing that if we visit a customer for any reason and there is an Elevate or there's a EPMP access point to service them, we're switching their CPE. And even if it's some, the dog chewed up the cable, well, he drove out there, replaced the CPE. But we're not making a point to forklift all of these locations. It's just, it's pretty easy to replace the hardware once you've driven there.
Gotcha. So you just keep a stack of radios ready to go just in case.
Well, we keep both Ubiquiti and Cambium gear in stock. So, our current bottleneck in elevating is manpower, because in 2.4 we have a lot of CISO radios out there still from years past when we started using the Ubiquiti gear. We would, we had a lot of gridded antennas and LMR 400 installs from devices before that, and we would put like bullet M2 radios on those. So now we have some gain issues because we had 24 dBi gain out there, and so we're having to replace a lot of those CISO radios with MIMO radios before we can then go and do the Elevate piece.
Gotcha. So something I thought would be fun to point out is that nobody's perfect on the radio front, really, in anything, because if there was a perfect solution, there would only be one radio that existed, right? So to me, a manufacturer, if they respond quickly and acknowledge they have a problem and fix the problem, that means a lot to me. It always hurts to lose subscribers. But ultimately, it seems like Brian, you guys have decided to continue to move forward with the EPMP solution, right?
Yes. A lot of that has to do with confidence in the manufacturer, right? So, once you've been promised enough things for long enough, I swear that I thought when EPMP GPS came out that was going to be a knife in the side of, vendor U, and they would figure it out. It was proven you can do it, So now that Elevate comes out, and they can do GPS sync on the same hardware that the other guy couldn't, dates are typically somewhat close. Again, nobody's perfect. Cambium does miss some dates here and there, but generally they own up to it and say, hey, we missed it. It's going to be X number more months, and then they hit it the second time.
Gotcha.
And that's understandable. It's if soon is the answer for like 3 years, I just don't have any faith that soon ever comes.
Gotcha.
So when we've rolled out Cambium recently, we haven't had serious complaints on it. Obviously, there are fewer complaints with a true Cambium deployment or even an elevated Cambium deployment than there were with any of the Ubiquity stuff that we've currently run. So,
gotcha.
We saw speed complaints, erratic latency complaints. So this is more of a GPS issue than it is an EPMP issue. But, you know, for those out there not aware that, you know, you might go from a 2-millisecond round trip ping on a non-synced network to a 40-millisecond ping, that happens. So we typically see 30 to 40 millisecond round trip times on our synced network.
That's interesting. Is it a consistent 30 or 40?
Yes, that's what I was getting to. Is,
oh, sorry.
You know, at 8 or 9 o'clock at night when everybody's pounding away on your network, you don't see that then jump up to 100 milliseconds. It's usually still in that 40, maybe 50 millisecond range. So it's nice and consistent. We're pushing more traffic through the network during those peak times, and customers are, you know, a lot happier. And that's we're pushing that traffic without using more spectrum. And in fact, in many cases, we're using less spectrum because we've stuck with 10 megahertz channels. And in most cases, there's been a few places where we've gone to 20 megahertz channels because we could. But if they're just a whole lot more efficient, and I think that's due to the polling algorithm that Cambium uses.
That's cool. I actually had on my notes to ask you about GPS sync and get a little bit more, or dig a little bit deeper in your experience with it. Is GPS sync the game changer everybody thinks it is, and is it something you really need in your network?
Well, I think that probably depends on your market and your area. If you're in, you know, if you're putting your APs down low enough where they're not really seeing each other, it becomes less of an issue. You know, so I was in the other camp of, hey, you need GPS sync if you don't know how to do RF planning. And I still agree with that. I mean, I could absolutely make this Ubiquity network work, but it's a lot of work to get it to be good. And, you know, in our experience so far with the Cambium gear is it's fairly easy. Once you pick some clean channels and set it, you're good. If you do end up getting interference on that sector, you can pretty much replan that sector or maybe just that tower. Whereas before on Ubiquity, it was like everything within 20 miles, we were changing channels. So it becomes pretty daunting. So in our part of the world, it's fairly flat, but there's a lot of trees. So you have to get up high on a tower for it to matter. And then once you're high on a tower, you can see all of your towers.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you were seeing some diminishing returns with the Ubiquity stuff. Maybe you were able to get in for a little bit cheaper on the equipment, but ultimately it was causing you a lot more administrative problems on the back end, or just administrative work, not necessarily problems, but a lot more work.
Well, I mean, it was our only option. In 2010, in that general price range, Ubiquity Air Max is the absolute best product you could possibly purchase. And I would probably say that EPMP wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Ubiquity Air Max. So they just came in and built a better product and put it at around the same price. So,
hey, Brian, what?
Go ahead.
For some operator out there who's like, I'm thinking of Elevate, what would be your top, you know, whatever you can think of, 1, 2, 3, what would be your top things that you would want to tell them to, you know, to either look out for or to make sure you do, or, you know, what's your advice?
You know, make sure that your device is supported. Expect the increase in latency. And don't expect that you will not have to purchase some replacement CPE, whether that's failures or whatever the case may be. You can't just elevate it and be completely done. Our intent is to delay an upgrade until Cambium has AC. So that's why I want to do my truck roll. I want to avoid the truck roll today.
Okay.
I just want to delay it until I can buy, newer hardware. Now we do truck rolls for the heavier users. So if we have a power user, we go pull their Ubiquiti radio out and put a Cambium in. We typically find the Cambium's a little more robust. But I have done, speed tests and some of the basic testing with an Elevate radio and a Cambium radio, same mount point, same RF environment, and found that they're usually within a couple percent on performance. Latency is similar, speed tests are similar, those sort of things. And I've tried that in both bridge mode and in that routed mode.
And I think maybe Dimitri, you've done one of the best explanations of why we need GPS sync. I think what are your thoughts on why we need GPS sync?
Okay, so here in the US we have two frequency ranges, like in general 2.4 and 5 gig. In 2.4 there is no way you can find non-overlapping channels. Well, you can use like 10 megahertz channels and try to use all the 2.4 frequency range. But in general, it's a must that you have to use GPS sync to get maximum out of 2.4 range. So switching to 5 gigahertz topic, usually the same story applies to 5.8. In 5.8, it's really hard to find enough of free space for 4 sectors. Especially if for the new company, you need additional separation between sectors. With EPMP, you can do it. We recommend 5 megahertz guard interval between the sectors. But I've seen installations that were working without any guard interval next to each other, next 20 megahertz channels working next to each other, and it was working fine. So this is why for better frequency usage, squeezing more out of existing unlicensed band, this is why you need GPS frequency. And looking at other competitors, they are finally trying to catch up with what we've done in Canopy, what we've done in EPMP. The same GPS sync is popping up left and right on other vendors' equipment.
So can I ask you, Dimitri, does GPS sync only help you with your own radios and interfering with yourself? Or if somebody else is just using a completely different radio that's not GPS sync, does it help you with that interference as well?
Well, first of all, GPS sync is about solving your self-interference issue. But if someone is using EPMP and you have your competitor running EPMP network next to you, it will definitely help. So we imagine that in some future we will have EPMP-only networks that will not interfere with each other.
Right. So, but what you're basically saying is GPS isn't a silver bullet, right? So if you're getting interference from some random source, it's not necessarily going to help you with that. It's really if everybody else is GPS synced and with your co-located equipment on a tower, it's going to help with that, right?
Yeah, that's right. But for the other interference sources, we have another bells and whistles to solve those interference issues. So beam steer antenna definitely will help. So for example, we can hear only specific subscriber with a narrow beam, we will listen for specific subscriber. And because we have deterministic system, we know that this specific subscriber will transmit, so we can fine-tune the beam towards this specific subscriber. Other thing we do, again, as soon as we deterministic comparing to regular Wi-Fi-based solution, we can transmit when we need to. We don't have to wait random timer or stuff like this if there is any source of interference or signal in the air. So we just transmit. And again, it helps us overcome the interference. Sometimes it's better to do retransmission twice instead of just waiting the random timer for air to get clear.
Gotcha. So what I think I hear you saying is it's a layering effect, right? GPS isn't the magic silver bullet, but you do GPS, you do beamforming, you do all of these software optimizations along with hardware optimizations, and then that gives you kind of the best product that you can have, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Excellent. Well, guys, we're coming right up on the hour. This is usually where we stick a fork in it because everybody's falling asleep at this point. Is there any last little words you guys would like to throw out? I'm gonna do the outro here in a second and get you guys.
I think Sakit had to drop off, but he said in our chat we have several questions that people have done on Facebook and things like that. So Sakit said he would answer those questions in email. So awesome. Rather than us just going through and pounding everybody with questions, those questions will be. We'll post those questions later.
Ah, so he's doing an AMA. I like it.
I was going through there, and my questions he'll do later, but it looks like he'll defer some of these other ones to Dimitri.
Okay. Do you have a couple we can pick out here, Mike? I know one of the burning questions is Elevate on MikroTik, and I think there's some news on that, Dimitri, maybe?
Well, there is some significant progress. I was thinking about throwing some screenshots somewhere on Facebook just to feed the audience that we are working on it.
Break
the internet. So we have some progress, and I think we said nothing about Wispapalooza coming next month, in a couple of weeks, actually. So come to our booth at Wispapalooza, and maybe you will see something about the MikroTik.
Interesting. Shots fired. I like it. I'm not going to say I don't like other people's products. What I really like is competition. You guys push each other to make each other better, so I love seeing it.
And I especially like when a manufacturer can take a competitor's product and do something that they couldn't with the exact same hardware.
It's a bit of a slap in the face.
And for us, it's fun.
it's a new challenge. I get the engineering mind, Dimitri. I understand that. Let's see, Dimitri, if folks out here on the internet want to get a hold of you or Sakit, what's the best way people would go about doing that?
Well, there is official way is to go to our community forum. We have community forum, and we usually go there every day and answer questions. And we used to do the AMA on our community forum. So that's the official way. But I'm also on Facebook. So in all the groups like Wisp Talks and stuff like this, you can chase me and ask me questions. And finally, the old email, you can throw me email if you know how to write my name, my Russian last name.
Well, it's here on screen. I think they can handle it. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. Part of the test to get to him, right?
There you go.
That's right. Yeah.
You notice I didn't even attempt to pronounce your last name, so.
That's okay. I get used to it. So.
All right.
Never go to Starbucks and try to order something with my name. He messed it so many times.
Just tell him your name's Bob. Call it a day.
I usually call myself John, so
there
it's
you
easy.
Go.
My Starbucks. All right. Yeah.
Justin Wilson, if people are going to get a hold of you out on the internet, how would you like them to do that?
The best place nowadays is j2sw.com. That's the jumping off point for everything me.
All right. Mr. Hammett, up there in Chicagoland, how would you like people to get a hold of you?
Preferably in person with large amounts of cash.
All right. So basically not at all. I gotcha.
Yeah. No, much like we commented with Dimitri, if you go to the internet and you can't find me, I probably don't want to be talking to you anyway. I'm easily found.
Gotcha. All right, Brian, I'm not sure if you want people out on the internet to find you or not, but if you wanted them to, where would they find you at?
Like like the other guys have said, I'm on Facebook and all the normal Wisp groups in there. That's probably the best.
Excellent. Well, the problem with becoming a subject matter expert is there's going to be a ton of people asking you for help here in the next couple of weeks. So just prepare yourself.
Well, I'm certainly no expert. So, I did have two more notes that I don't know that I touched on that would make Sakit happy. Generally, we're seeing 2 to 3x aggregate throughput increases on a sector.
Wow.
And we've had individual cases of as much as 10x throughput.
That's awesome.
That's significant.
And that's on software and a new access point. So
that's crazy. And you said overall customer satisfaction has gone up, right?
Yes.
All right, which makes your life easier, which ultimately is probably the best part of all of it.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
I think before you talk about yourself, I think everybody here will be at Wispapalooza. You're going, aren't you, Brian?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yep, so I think all of us will be there.
Excellent. Well, again, I'm going to be a newbie at Wispapalooza, so people find me and tell me what I'm supposed to be doing, point me in the right direction. I am Greg Soule. You can find me at gregsoule.com. You can find most of us, well, half of us, a portion of us, at thebrotherswisp.com. You can also find us facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. All of those updates, all of the responses, that's usually Mike. He's great about that. Justin's starting to try and compete with him a little bit of the Facebook update stuff, which is great. I, again, want to thank the guests today. Sakit, who's already dropped off. Dimitri, thank you so much. Brian, thank you guys so much for being on here. And we appreciate the brains, the dumping of knowledge.
Thanks for all you guys do.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.